Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and we continue our celebration of that with June Herr, author of The Silence of Bones. This conversation originally took place April 29th, 2020, and was recorded live via Zoom. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
I want to welcome everyone to the third of our virtual events in the Jean and John Rowe program series, My America, Immigrant and Refugee Writers Today. The exhibit that accompanies this series opened at our Chicago Museum in November and opened online a couple of weeks ago at my-america.org. At that site, you can see stories from writers from 18 different countries talking about family, connection, influence, and what it means to them to write about being American and about their feelings about America. My name is Allison Sansoni, and I'm the program director at the American Writers Museum. We're grateful to all of you for being here and for valuing the past, present, and future of great writing. And our guest for tonight's program is June Herr, up there, who knows something about finding oneself amidst history. She grew up in Toronto, but her book, The Silence of Bones, takes place in historical Korea, was selected as an ABA top debut title and made a Junior Library Guild selection, and was just published to reviews. Is rapturous the word?
That's a nice word.
Two fantastic reviews. Welcome, June.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for being here. Congratulations on the book. It's your first, correct?
It is.
That's a big step. That's wonderful.
Quite the experience.
Yeah. So The Silence of Bones is a murder mystery, yes. and it takes its cue from a really turbulent period in Korean history. Tell us a little bit about the world that the book takes place in.
So it begins in 1800s Korea, specifically 1800, and it's when a Chinese Catholic priest smuggles himself into Joseon Korea. And this is during a time when all Western beliefs, teachings, and that includes like religion, science, literature, anything from the West back then in Korea was punishable by death. And so when the Catholic priest smuggled himself in, that was illegal. And so basically the entire Korean kingdom was on a manhunt for him. And the mystery revolves around this tension between traditional Korea and the West. I just found that period so fascinating, and so that kind of became the backdrop and the driving force behind the mystery.
Yeah. How did your main character Seoul goes through so much in terms of, you know, as she's trying to solve this mystery, you know, she's questioning her status, she's an indentured servant, she's questioning her religious beliefs and her family even. How did, where did her journey come from?
So when I first began writing about her, I actually meant her to be an adult, and I imagined her to be this very cynical, cold woman in her 20s. But then as I was writing this book, I just kept seeing this image of this bright-eyed 16-year-old indentured servant, and she'd be like, you know, exploring the capital. She was so fascinated by everything and super curious. And so writing about her kind of came from almost like maybe some subconscious place in me that never saw myself really represented in literature, and maybe there was this like teen in me that wanted to kind of jump out and onto the pages, and she just kind of appeared like that. And I think also growing up as a in a very traditional household and in a Korean community, I was raised you know, to always be respectful of my elders, and so the idea of like being quiet in front of my superiors, being obedient, that was a value I was raised with. And so it was very easy to relate to a heroine who was of a more subservient position, but at the same time, you know, you can't solve a mystery without being super curious and somewhat rebellious. And so I think the mystery plot of it kind of brought out this subtly rebellious side of her. And yeah, just like wanting me as a writer wanting to explore the world of Korea made her curious as well, because I wanted to explore the world through her.
Yeah, the book incorporates a lot of Korean language, some of it describing practices and customs mm-hmm. that are, you know, that are antiquated. Tell me a little bit about working in multiple languages and multiple time periods and how that affected the writing.
So when I first began writing it, I think, like, because, so there's this thing called in among Koreans called Konglish, which is basically Korean and English mixed together. And so there's always certain words that, like, even Korean, Americans, Korean, Canadians can really relate to. And so when I was writing this book, those kind of words that, you know, as Koreans, we immediately recognize, I wanted to add that in. And other things, I kept Korean because I wanted to kind of retain its authenticity without having to translate. Because I find that when I'm writing a Korean historical, danger of like always translating everything into English is that it almost loses its uniqueness. So for example, if I wrote that the heroine was wearing a dress, maybe readers who knew nothing about Korea would imagine like maybe a Victorian era gown instead of a hanbok, which is a traditional Korean dress. And so in those cases, to like kind of retain that uniqueness, I chose to use the Korean language. And just like, I just love like the idea of, you know, a language that was used back then that I might not have access to now. And I just love adding those little gems throughout the book. But yeah.
Were there concepts that you had an easier time expressing in Korean or in English?
Yes. Let me think. I'm not so much sure about English, but with Korean is such an interesting language where you can have one word in Korean, but it takes multiple words in English to try and capture that sentiment. And so, for example, in the Korean language, there's a word called han, and that word kind of means anger, resentment, the desire for revenge, helplessness, and grief. And it's just like all jammed into that one word. And even then, it's that the English definitions don't capture that sentiment well. And it's a very uniquely Korean and historical term. And so there's words like that, you know, I couldn't really translate into English. So I just like added like a whole paragraph trying to explain this one word. But yeah, there's cases like that.
That's a lot of work that one word is doing. mm-hmm. Yeah. So had you always had an interest in this particular period of history? Is that why you chose to set the story there?
I love this question because I have such a long history behind actually writing about this history. So when I first began dreaming of becoming a writer, I actually wrote British historicals. Like, I loved the Regency era, I loved the Victorian era. When I was in university, I studied, I focused on British history. But I think I wrote a book set in Britain, but it didn't work out like when I was trying to get it published. Like, it's just such a saturated history that it's hard to kind of break out, especially as a debut author. So I wasn't able to land an agent with this book. I tried to get it published for like over 10 years. I'd rewrite it from scratch and everything. So it wasn't working out. And then for my second book, I just wanted to start fresh. So I just kind of explored different histories around the world, but nothing was really resonating with me. And then finally I was like, you know, I grew up watching Korean historical dramas, and the most popular period in Korean historical dramas is Joseon era Korea. And so just one day I was like I just wanted something new, something different. And so I searched for a book that was about that period that I loved watching on TV, but I couldn't really find that many written in English. There was only like a handful, and many of them were adult books, and they were very heavy. But I just wanted this escapist mystery book, almost like a Victorian mystery, but set in Joseon Korea. But I couldn't find what I wanted to read, and so I was just like, oh, you know, like what, like why isn't anyone writing about more about the Joseon period? And I started researching into it, and I just fell madly in love with it. There's this beautiful complexity to it. There's like problematic sides of it, and yet this beautiful side of it as well. And I was so interested with the tension that was going on, like I said, between traditional Korea and the West. And I was fascinated by the gender segregation that was quite severe during that time. And I was like, I'm Korean, but I had no idea that this was a thing. And so I just wanted to learn more about it. And so that's how I ended up writing a book set in that period.
Yeah, that's what they always tell you, right? Is to write the book that you want to read.
Yeah.
So reading the book, I was struck, you know, you just mentioned the idea of, you know, parallels to, I kept thinking of parallels to today, the idea of, you know, a suspicion of outsiders that leads to this violence and obscures solutions to political and moral problems. I mean, was that a conscious decision on your part to sort of weave these contemporary threads through the story?
I think especially as like an immigrant, as a marginalized woman, I've always been aware of the concept of, you know, the other. And that's something I've always related to the most when it comes to books. Like I've always been interested in characters who are somewhat like considered like the outsiders, or people who are considered like, you know, different from the norm or something like that. And so when I was researching, like I immediately found myself gravitating towards the tension that, you know, we were talking about right now. And so there's I'm like a Christian as well. So I relate to this Catholic priest who just wanted to share his faith. But then the Korean side of me that is very protective of my culture also understands the fear of, you know, a different influence entering the country. And, you know, by then it was already the 19th century. So I'm sure like Korea already started hearing of, you know, what was going outside of their kingdom. And so there is that sense of fear. And so I found myself relating to both sides of what was going on in Korea. And so that's what I really wanted to portray in my book. Like on the one side, there were genuine Catholic converts that were, you know, rising up in Korea, these underground Catholics movement going on. And at the same time, there were these, you know, other individuals in Korea who were just like terrified of, you know, the fear of losing their tradition. And Korea has always been a kingdom that has been like the target of invasion. And so they have this mentality of self-preservation. And so I was totally able to relate to that as well. And so for me, what was really important was not to make either side the right side. I just wanted to explore both sides and give them equal chances of, you know, telling their sides of the story.
You were focusing on the impact on the lives of your characters. You know, it's not a political history. You were looking at, you know, how does this affect this woman, this young woman who's a, you know, who's an indentured servant to the police, how do all of these forces impact her?
So as an indentured servant, she was like thrown into this time of turmoil, a country on the brink of persecution. But then she has to solve this murder mystery. And so, yeah, it's like weaving through this chaos that's going on right now.
A large part of her story is her looking for a place where she fits, where she feels at home. where, you know, and you mentioned a little bit about how that echoed, you know, kind of your own story. Where, mm-hmm. where is the place for you that you feel mm-hmm. at home?
So when I was writing the book, I actually didn't intend for this to be the theme, but I think because I think about it so often, it just naturally happened. So I like my parents live in Korea, and I haven't lived with them for over 10 years for sure. And so my question has always been like, you know, when the people who love you the most don't live with you, like where is home? Because for me, I always considered home to be where my parents are. But then when they no longer lived with me, like I had to wrestle with, you know, like where is home? And now like, you know, I'm married, I have a baby, and the easy answer would be like, oh, it's with my baby and my husband. But, you know, I think the more complicated answer is it's almost like even when you have an idea of where home is, when you go to that place, you realize it's not quite that as well. So it's, for me, my answer is very complicated. Like, I feel like I have echoes of an idea of what home should be, this perfect utopian home. And so like different places, like, you know, when I go to Korea with my parents, like I see kind of answers to what I'm longing for there in Korea, but then I also see bits and pieces of what I long for my home to be with my family here. But I feel like it's always a journey. Like you're always searching. You're always like seeing glimpses of the home you really want in different places. And a lot of it is in memory. I feel like home, there's like a nostalgic element to it. Like you don't really realize where home is until you kind of look back, or when home is taken away from you, for example. But yeah, it's not, for me, it's like this gray in-between answer.
Yeah. When the idea of loyalty resonates mm-hmm. so strongly in this book of, you know, who or what people are loyal to and mm-hmm. what they'll do for that loyalty, what do you, you know, in that vein, what do you consider yourself loyal to?
For sure, family. Like I would do anything for my siblings. They live here in Canada. For my own family, like my husband and my daughter and my parents. So for me, loyalty is very family oriented. And so that kind of drifted out into the main character's story, where she's like very loyal to her family, but also to people she loves as well.
Yeah. Have you sent the book to family in South Korea? Have they, what's their response been?
It's still in shipment. I said, oh, I'll send you one. And my mom's like, no, send me like three. So I just sent them four. But my parents have always supported my writing since I was young. But they actually never read any of my work until recently when I was about to get published, and my mom, she's not that good at English, but she like had a dictionary next to her, and then she was like, she read through the whole book twice, and I was like, oh my gosh, it was really moving.
That's such a mom thing. That's
yeah,
great.
I know.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's wonderful. What? Tell me a little bit about your journey to becoming a writer.
So my journey began when my dad was really stressed about me doing so bad in English class. And so he'd like constantly bring home different books, trying to get me to read. And then finally I watched the adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, and then I felt like I was crazy about it. And so when I was around 12, I'd start writing like my own fan fiction of Pride and Prejudice. Like my dad would have like a stack of, he was studying to become for his PhD, and so he'd always have like stacks of paper, and he'd recycle them, but then I'd take the stack and then I'd write on the other side of it like my own fan fiction of it. And then from there I began writing my own historical fictions, and that was around high school. And in the middle of high school I had to move back to Korea, and I attended a Korean public high school, so I'd be in class from like 8 a.m. until like 10 or 11 p.m. It was such a long period. And in order to cope, because I didn't really know Korean that well back then, in order to cope, I'd just write in class because I didn't understand the language that well. And because I didn't understand the language, I didn't feel like smart. Everyone else seemed smarter than me. But writing was the only thing that kind of affirmed me. Writing like would tell me like, you know, you have a mind of your own, you have stories in your head and they're valuable. Like, you know, I'd post my stories up online and readers would respond. And that kind of just made me feel like there was something of worth in my head somewhere. And so I think that's when I decided, you know, I want to be an author because I don't think I'd be good at anything else. And so I just kind of fixated on becoming an author. And in university, I began querying because in order to get published, in most cases, you need an agent. And an agent's like that middle person between, you know, the book I write and a publisher. So I began querying to agents and, you know, rejections rolled in. And that was like more than 10 years ago. And then around 2016, I think it just hit me like so hard that, you know, I might not get published right away. And I think when that kind of hit me, I realized I wasn't doing much with my life except writing. Like I neglected friendships, my social life, everything in the name of writing. And so that was a bit of a wake-up call for me. So I put writing on hold and I just kind of, you know, got out of my house and explored the world a bit. I tried teaching, you know, I met new friends and that's how I met my husband. So it turned out well. and so after that, I got that restless itch to write again. And that's when I wrote my Korean historical and it went pretty smoothly from there on.
Yeah. Yeah. You came to the book that you were meant to write.
Yes. Yeah.
So what did writing this book teach you about writing?
The first thing it taught me was to write things that are slightly terrifying, like to write outside of my comfort zone. Because for so long, I just wrote the things that I was confident that I could kind of execute well. And so when it came to this Korean book, like I realized, you know, I'd have to research from ground up. I'd have to change my writing style to, you know, be authentic to the culture and the history. And so I was terrified. And it took me, I think, a year of just, you know, researching and mustering up the courage to even write a draft of it. And so, yeah, it taught me to be brave with my writing, to be willing to write the wrong story. That's what writing taught me.
Yeah. It's a mystery. So did you know from the beginning who done it, how you wanted to end it, or did
nope.
you?
No.
No.
Really? Yeah. So when I watched and read mystery books, but I never wrote one before. And so when I was writing it, like I had an idea of who I wanted to be the killer, but then as I was writing it, like other characters would pop up with different backstories, different motivations, and I'd be like, hey, this person seems more suspicious. And so I'd change the story so that they're the killer, but then in the next draft I'm writing, and then the same characters, cast of characters, like they develop, they have like deeper, more complex backstories, and then I'd change my mind again, and I'd be like, oh, wait a minute, you seem more suspicious. And so it kept like changing, and so the result is that, you know, a lot of the characters all seem suspicious, but during revision I finally figured out who the killer was, and that's when I kind of, you know, go back and I weave in all the evidences and red herrings, and yeah, that's what happened.
Well, it kept me up all night trying to figure out who it was.
Yay, success.
I love the idea that your characters can change as mm-hmm. you're writing. I mean, mm-hmm. what did your heroine do that surprised you, if you can say without spoiling it?
What did she do? I think what surprised me was just her lack of self-preservation, like her willingness to, you know, like put her own life in danger to solve a mystery. that was what surprised me. And what surprised me the most actually was her kindness. Because I always gravitate towards these like tormented characters, but she had this kindness to her that just took me off guard. And yeah, like it was totally not what I wanted my heroine to be, but she turned out like that. And, you know, I just adore her now.
Yeah, she really does. She really does want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Gets in her own way sometimes, doesn't she? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your research. Was it a lot of like primary source work? Were you going to archives, or were there texts that you relied on more than others?
So the research was probably the most difficult thing I've ever done in my writing history. So there's, you know, like compared to, for example, like what I'm used to, which was like Victorian resources, like there's like so many information out there. But then compared to that, like the Korean resources is a bit more limited. And then the further back you go into Korean history, like pre-colonized Korea, like the information just starts getting like even more difficult to find. And so like I found a few gems, like a few books that I bought that I rely on constantly. Like, you know, one of the books is about wrongful cases that were basically butchered cases butchered by the police bureau. So I relied on that a lot. Other books were just like, it gives you like Korean resources translated into English. So those were like government documents, letters between, you know, family. Those things were really precious to me. But then when it came to very detailed information, like my heroine is a Tamo, so a female police officer / servant. But trying to find information on her role was so difficult. All I came up with was like, you know, a few lines in English. And so what I had to do is I had to search in Korean. And that's when I came up with a bit more information. But yeah, like a lot of the more niche information, I'd have to research in Korean. And while I'm fluent, like I'm academic Korean is a whole nother level. And so took a lot of hours of just translating what I discovered, and the Korean articles that I relied on also uses Hanja, which is classical Chinese. And so I'd be translating Chinese and I'd be like, I don't even know Korean that well, and I'm trying to understand the Chinese. And so it was, yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was also one of the most rewarding experience I've, you know, ever had the privilege of, you know, researching.
Did you have any sort of wow moments where you found something that was, you know, that was really extraordinary or that really surprised you?
It was for me gender segregation, like how severe it was back then. So the details that really fascinated me was how like women, kind of similar to the West, there was like the public sphere that belonged to the men and the inner sphere that belonged to the women. But I feel like Korea took it like a bit more to the extreme, where like even within the household, there's this inner sphere where women belong to and they're not allowed to kind of leave it. And at night, the doors to the women's quarter would be locked. And if unmarried women wanted to leave their house, they'd have to travel within like a palanquin, or they'd have to like, you know, have a headdress to cover them up. And that was really fascinating. And this gender segregation ended up kind of leaking its way into palace life. So you ended up with like female nurses, not because, you know, the palace was feminist, but because male physicians weren't allowed to touch or see royals who were women, so princesses and queens and concubines. And so that's why they created this group of female nurses. And the same thing with the police bureau, male police officers weren't allowed to work with, you know, female criminals and corpses. And so they ended up taking this group of servants who are indentured to the police bureau and making them do the work that they're not able to do. So that's how the female police officers were formed. And I found that so fascinating.
Yeah, that's a book in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. June, was there a passage that you'd like to read to us from, sure. from the book we've been talking about?
So I'll be reading from chapter 1. The capital lay deep in stillness. By morning, the dirt road usually clamored with life outside Cheongdeok Palace. Women crowding fish stalls, farmers carrying produce, scholars garbed in silk robes, and monks with prayer beads strung around their necks. And there would always be a mob of children, faces burnt and glistening in the sticky heat, chasing one another down the street. But not today. Do you suppose the rumors are true, Officer Ken? Rain pitter-pattered against the black-tiled roofs as I lowered the satgat over my face, allowing the drops to dribble down from the pointed top and off the wide straw brim. Whispers that the king was assassinated. Mud squelched under boots as police officers trudged ahead. Officer Ken, the last in line and the youngest of all, sent a fierce look over his shoulder. Watch what you say. The capital is nothing like your countryside. He was referring to Incheon Prefecture. A few months had passed since I'd left home, brought to the Capital Police Bureau to be trained as a police Tamil, an indentured servant of all work. But, I'll tell you this much. Officer Ken eyed our gray surrounding as he adjusted the sash belt over his black robe. When King Jongjo died, there came a terrible noise of weeping from Mount Samgap, and rays of sunlight collided, then burst into sparks. An omen? I whispered. A bad omen. The old order has passed and the new will come with a river of blood. The king was dead and our lives were going to change. I had learned this while serving wine to police officers, eavesdropping into the accounts of politics and treachery that oftentimes left me overexcited. It was all I could think of, even as we were journeying to a crime scene, summoned there by the inspector. Let me tell you something about the capital, newcomer. The one thing everyone wants is power, to gain it or to stabilize it. He clucked his tongue and waved me away. What use has a Tamil to know such things? No woman should talk as much as you. Annoyance pinched at me as I followed in his shadow. He was right, of course, though I did not yet consider myself a woman. I was only 16. Still, I'd learned that among the seven sins a woman could commit, one was talking excessively. A man could even divorce his wife because of her chattiness. I blamed the older sister for my longing to know more. She was unusually learned for a servant, with vast knowledge of Buddhist and Confucian verses. She would always try to hide it from me and the villagers. I would tug at her long sleeve, asking her to tell me more, but she would pull away and say, "It is better for you not to know these things. Do not stand out. Do not be so curious. Then you will have a long life soul." I had resented her for this. Though now I understood her better. The longing for knowledge only got me into trouble these days. You there. I looked ahead. Inspector Han stood in the near distance, watching me from beneath the wide brim of his black police hat. The string of beads threaded on the chin strap trembled in the gusty rain. Behind him was a team of men, who must have arrived at the scene before us. Two officers, a coroner's assistant, a legal clerk, and a police artist. I hurried toward the inspector while the six officers who had traveled with me exchanged information among themselves, murmuring in my periphery. Found by a watchman. When? He was patrolling the south gate, and at the end of his watch, there she was. I gathered my hands before me and bowed to Inspector Han, deeper than was necessary. He was one of the few worthy enough to see the top of my head. He was to me the great spotted leopard from my village, the speedy and well-muscled hunter who excelled at climbing and jumping and in slipping silently through the grass with scarcely a ripple. "You called for me, Inspector?" I asked. "Have a look at her." He gestured at a lump a few paces away. I walked into the vast shadow of the wall that enclosed Hanyang, the capital of Joseon. Its height blocked out the sight of mountains, and it was so thick that an invader might take 1,000 years to chip through the massive stones. Yet dangerous as the world outside the fortress was, clearly danger lurked within as well. My stomach turned to water as I stood before a young woman. She lay sprawled, drenched in rain, her face turned to the ground. Her long dress and jacket of silky Rami cloth, the hem and sleeves richly embroidered with floral patterns, marked her as a noble. "Roll her over," Inspector Han ordered. "We have yet to see her wound." I stepped over the corpse, crouched, and grabbed her shoulder. This was why the Capitol Police Bureau kept female servants like me. I was an extension of the officers, my hands used by them to arrest female criminals and to examine female victims. An inconvenience for the police, and yet men were forbidden from touching women who were not directly related to them. It was the law, Confucius's law. And that's it.
Thank you. That was wonderful. So what books are you working on now? What are where is your attention going next?
So right now I just submitted the second book in my contract to my editor, and it's called The Forest of Stolen Girls. And it's about two estranged sisters who have to work together to search for their missing father. And their missing father happens to be the greatest detective in the kingdom, but then he suddenly disappears. And it's set in Jeju Island. Right now, Jeju Island is considered the Hawaii of Korea. But back then, in like the 1400s, it was actually a penal island where all the political convicts were sent. And so, that's the book I'm working on right now. And I'm just kind of imagining other books that I'd like to write, but nothing written down right now, though.
Yeah. Who are some other writers that you're reading right now that interest or inspire you?
Let me see. So right now, I'm always kind of like reading Tana French's book. She's a mystery author. I think she's Irish, but she's like she writes masterpieces, mysteries that are masterpieces. And so I'm always like reading, and they're huge. So I'm always working, chipping away at her books and trying to learn from her. And I'm trying to go back to the classics. So the next thing on my list, I really want to read Les Miserables. And just because I feel like the author of that book, you know, creates emotions so well. And I just want to learn how he does that. Yeah, Les Mis. And one of the young adults I'm reading is Janelle Angela's Where Dreams Descend. Yes.
June, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it. And best of luck with the rest of your virtual book tour.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Tune in next week to hear Rowan Hisayu Buchanan and T. Kara Madden discuss their contributions to Go Home, an anthology of Asian diasporic writers musing on the notion of home. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.